What's in store for the future of Hemming Park? Local businesses weigh in. Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Ryan Bank, in for Melissa Ross. We're always live here at 9, and make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or through the WJCT app. You can also hear our audio feed on the First Coast Connect Facebook page. And just ahead, the Friends of Hemming Park have a friend in Mayor Lenny Curry, at least for the next 6 months. The city is giving them more time to find more ways to improve the front porch of City Hall. How do the surrounding businesses feel about the park's uncertain future? Let us know your thoughts about what should be done with Hemming Park at 549-2937. Then later, we'll hear about the upcoming pop culture convention, Collective Con, at the Morocco Shrine Auditorium. Plus, Culpepper brings us up to date on the weekend sports news and lets us know how his picks are faring in the NCAA basketball tournament. All of that ahead. But first this hour, late last year, Jacksonville Chief Administrative Officer Sam Musa told City Council that the administration had planned to take back control of Hemming Park from the nonprofit organization Friends of Hemming Park. They've helmed downtown Jacksonville's Central Plaza since 2014. The news of a city takeover came after the FOHP was criticized for some of its spending habits. It led to the departure of CEO Vince Cavan. But earlier this month, Mayor Lenny Curry announced he would give the Friends of Hemming Park another chance and granted the group a six-month contract extension. The move has once again launched the debate of what should be done with the long-term future of Hemming Park. To talk about this morning, we are joined by Bill Prescott, interim CEO for the Friends of Hemming Park. Welcome.
Thank you.
Jen Ernest, co-owner of the Candy Apple Cafe and Cocktails, which is next door to Sweet Pete's Candy Store, kitty corner across the road from the park. And Emily Moody, co-owner of the Wolf and Cub Boutique on Laura Street across the way from Hemming as well. Our question to callers is, what should be done with Hemming Park? Should it be a full-blown location for numerous events, or should it be a passive park that is more of a walk-through area to City Hall? Are you a business owner or a shopper? How do you think changes to Hemming Park affect the surrounding shops? Let us know, 549-2937. So, Bill, I guess we'll start with you. I want to kind of bring our listeners up to speed, kind of quick, concise history lesson of who the Friends of Hemming Park are and how they took over the management of the park.
So we started in 2014. It was Wayne Wood, myself, and several others that submitted for the request for a proposal to take over management. Our feeling at that time was it was important to bring programming to the park and be dedicated to management of the park, bringing in ambassadors for cleaning and those types of things. That was in 2014. We had a three-year contract and then one-year renewal options. We're moving along, hit the bump in the road in terms of from the city funding of it, some questionable spending, which I think we've addressed. But at that time, going through it, we really learned that the city was mostly interested in the clean and safe, not the programming piece of it. And so in August of this past year, kind of under budget constraints and funding, we really changed our focus to say more, okay, we're going to focus on clean and safe and achieve what the city's looking to do in terms of making the park more welcoming.
Right, and the clean atmosphere for the park and the fact that they have events also affects local businesses. We want to talk about that kind of intersection between the surrounding businesses and what happens in Hemming. Jen, tell us a little bit about Candy Apple Cafe and when it was first founded and how you think it's affected by what happens in Hemming Park.
Well, I can say that our decision to move downtown was greatly impacted by Friends of Hemming taking over Hemming Park. Pete and Allison, Liz and I kind of came up with this larger scale concept that included the candy and the restaurant space working together. And Marcus Lemonis, who is Pete and Allison's partner, and our landlord looked at many, many spaces, and he really was not open to the idea of investing in downtown until he heard about Friends of Hemming Park. And so it changed his feeling that downtown was invested in, or that the city was invested in downtown's development, and ultimately helped us kind of win our argument that this was the place for us to be. So I haven't known downtown as a business owner without Friends of Hemming. And I can say that as the programming has changed over the last 6 or 8 months, I have felt a change. Friends of Hemming has been really integral for us in creating a welcoming environment for downtown, bringing people in through programming and working with us to make sure that the programming is symbiotic with our business.
And we'll get to your calls here in just a second, 549-2937. Emily, you are very, very new to this area of downtown. Wolf & Cub is a boutique that you've recently opened. What influenced your decision to decide on that location?
Well, we actually started Wolf & Cub by doing pop-ups, doing Jackson's Night Market. I am a former business owner of downtown on a separate business, so I was familiar with kind of the landscape of downtown and what challenges were down there. But I mean, seconding what Jen said about being able to have Hemming there as a whole kind of counterpoint for, I don't know, it's really good to be down there.
Well, and you could have, there's, you know, we also know there's a lot of issues with downtown development, right, Bill? And so there's areas of downtown that there is spaces that have just been laying vacant for a very long time. But if most people they go downtown and they walk through Hemming Park, they do notice that the area directly surrounding the park is, I mean, that's where all of the shops and things that are coming downtown seem to be popping up. Do you think that's a coincidence? I have a feeling that you think it's not, but
no, I don't think it's not. And one of the things when we first started out meeting with Downtown Investment Authority, putting this together, was our feeling that that was really ground zero for downtown. And for the city to invest in that, to bring in programming, was the opportunity for what I think is a relatively low-cost investment and a quick investment compared to what it's going to take to redo the trios or other real estate development. That's long-term. And this was a short-term, to me, a win in terms of what we could bring downtown. And we've seen it with just the food trucks there every day. We do about 100 lunches a day in the park, which wasn't happening before. And those little things, and that's what we need, hopefully, with this contract extension, to really begin to build the program. It's going to be on us to raise the dollars to do that. But we think that's an important component. But I think with the city funds for clean and safe, we can continue to make that more welcoming.
Now, there was two major issues that I think some city council members had or worries that they had, concerns with the Friends of Hemming Park. The first was, you know, is it clean and safe? Does it feel welcoming for people? And the second was some of those discrepancies in the accounting. There was money that was spent on staff lunches and money that was spent on gadgets and TVs. How have you tried to kind of assuage the fears of some of these council members that moving forward, there'll be a little bit more of the money will be spent a little bit better?
It was a little bit of learning. I think what got lost in the conversation was originally the city put in $1 million. We raised over $300,000 in private donations that came in. All the funds were commingled, so you began to take a look, well, who was spending what dollars on what? And that was one of the things that came out, is we immediately said, for the city, said, hey, listen, we want to spend our dollars on clean and safe, not on programming. And so last August, we separated out accounts, and so the city knows exactly what we're spending the dollars on. That's how I think we got over that hurdle in terms of financial responsibility.
Right. Okay. So let's go to your calls. William in downtown. William, you're on the air. William?
Yes. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. What's your question or statement?
Well, I guess I'm not a friend of Hemming Park. I work in the area. I live downtown. And all I ever see in Hemming Park are the homeless. And I don't know whether that's because they sort of border that little wall or that little area that faces Laura Street, but I wouldn't go into Hemming Park. I wouldn't feel safe there, and I don't shop in that area. I don't even know what shops are in that area. When I hear the music, when I have to park in front of Hemming Park, park my automobile there to go to the the offices that I go to in that area, all I hear is music that would that maybe homeless people would like. I don't know. That it's not it's not musical, music or jazz or. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, what do you mean by music that homeless people would like?
Well, I know that's pejorative, but I just mean the music is not from my taste, and I can only talk about me. Not, you know, I'm not the expert on this, but from my taste, I would like to hear classical music or good jazz music in the area. Something that was a little bit more uplifting rather than popular music, I guess.
Right. So if you tell me, William, what do you want to see the city take the park back over? Would you like to see less programming? Would you like to be like it to see it as a passive park? Because for many years, the park still had many of these same problems, and it, you know, some would argue it was worse before the programming. So what would you like to see be done with the park?
Well, I'd like the park, like some of the walks along the river and other places downtown, I'd like to see them more secured by police presence. Or I'd like to be able to walk downtown and enjoy downtown without having to be panhandled or worried about some mentally ill person coming up to me and trying to carry on a conversation, or even people that have criminal intent.
Okay.
And I don't think that everybody's like that downtown, because I know we have a lot of people that stay at the hotels downtown that are from other places, but it's just a peeve of mine. And
sure.
I don't have a solution to the homeless problem, but if you want to know why people don't want to go downtown, my friends tell me it's because of, you know, because of the kind of unsavory characters that you meet down there.
Sure. Thank you.
Who wants to be around them?
Thank you for your call. Thank you for your call, William. So Bill, yeah, like we said, that was a major part of City Council's worry as well, was the security of the park, and there is a transient and homeless population. What say you to William's concerns?
There's no doubt. A couple of things. One is Friends of Hemming. We look to address some of that because we have a full-time social service worker who works with people in the park, who's gotten people housing and jobs. But what you find is that's probably only about 20% of the population. The rest of the population is there. This is, you know, where they go. This is where they hang out. And it's a bigger problem. Friends of Hemming Park is not going to solve the homeless problem. It's a bigger conversation that needs to take place. And, yeah, it's a key component, I think, to how do you make all of downtown more welcoming. We've obviously addressed it because, you know, people have every right to be in the park, but you have to abide by the park rules. And that was one good thing that came out of the special committee from City Council on Hemming Park, was they heard firsthand from our ambassadors, our social service worker, what was going on.
Do you think it's time to maybe beef up the social service staff? Maybe instead of one social worker, we have more? Or do you think that's just not the problem?
All the services that deal with the homeless downtown, the center, they need to come together. And it's a conversation for all of downtown. Yes, Friends of Hemming Park is part of it, but it's a much bigger conversation that has to take place.
Now, we have a lot of calls on the line, and we were going to get to them as soon as possible, but I want to bring in our business owners here too. Can you tell me, Jen, a little bit about, you know, so there's two competing arguments here, right? One is these are the normal growing pains of a large city. In a metropolitan area, you're always going to have those that are homeless and those that are less fortunate. And it's just something that the city has to deal with on a macro level. But then you also have those like William who say, you know, I don't want to shop and I don't even know what shops are downtown because I don't want to be approached by some of these people and I feel unsafe. So as a business owner, how does that affect you?
Well, I mean, that's a complaint that we deal with that I hear on a regular basis. I think the only thing that we can do is to sort of try to educate on the stigma. Downtown actually is an extremely safe neighborhood. I understand the nuisance that people here feel with some of the homeless population panhandling or talking with them. I think that the city's strategy to really focus on clean and safe is key for helping that piece, making the environment more welcoming. But I think programming is integral as well as far as fixing that piece, because some of it is a density issue. And if we choose that we're not going to frequent downtown, the non-homeless population decides it's not going to frequent downtown, then we're not going to create a solution. Part of that is that we have to go in, we have to program, we have to use this space. Our downtown is full of so many great cultural institutions. There's wonderful boutiques and restaurants that are coming in there. And so what we ask for and we encourage everybody is to invest in downtown. And you do that by going to the shops, going to Mocha, going to our restaurant. That's how we make a change happen.
And we'll get to your calls in just a second. Emily, tell me a little bit about how this factored into your decision to come downtown. Did this factor in your decision?
Well, one of the reasons that we moved downtown was because we knew that activation was happening with businesses like Candy Apple and Friends of Hemming. So the fact that now there's a little bit of a bump in the road. I mean, like Jen said, we can definitely see a difference in the momentum. But, you know, this weekend was awesome. Gastrofest was packed and it was really positive. But the density there with the non-transient versus just the regular citizens of Jacksonville being in the park was outnumbered. But when it's just day to day, you don't have that density of people there that are showing up and participating in businesses and supporting what's going on down there.
All right, we have a backlog of calls, so we're going to go to Jen on the south side. Jen, you're on the air.
Hi. So first of all, I think it's important to talk about our homeless population with compassion and also just practicality. There was a lot of discussion, maybe I'm wrong, but from what I understand, to just relocate the homeless population in Hemming Plaza, it doesn't fix the issue. And I know that there was some discussion about opening another homeless shelter and kind of providing more resources for our homeless population.
Right.
And I think it's just integral, I mean, to find out what to do with the park and figure out what best suits our needs. We have to make sure that those people have a place to go.
Sure.
And that their needs are met.
Well, thank you, Jen. Thank you for your call. So how about that, Bill? Is you know, someone that's saying, you talked about having community partners to try to solve this issue with compassion and get placement for those that are homeless. But, you know, how do you go about doing that? Have you already started talking with some of these other community partners?
There are other conversations. Obviously, the closing of the day center, we did see a pickup in terms of the population that's there. And once again, I think it's a much bigger conversation. You know, we try to use, as I said, our social service worker to do things in terms of find home housing for people, to find jobs for people. But once again, that's a small piece of the population.
And have you heard anything from the city in particular? Have you expressed these concerns to the city that this is a citywide problem and not necessarily indicative of just Hemming Park?
We have, and the special committee, I think they heard firsthand in terms of what goes on in the park. And so they're aware of it, but I think, once again, it's a bigger conversation than, you know, just this contract extension for Hemming Park.
Jim in Riverside. Jim, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you. I just want to comment that it sounds to me that the city sort of has its priorities whacked a little bit here. They're asking Friends of Hemming Park to be responsible for the safe and clean aspect of the park, and if it's a city park, that's the city of Jacksonville's responsibility. Sounds like they just wanted to farm out their own responsibility, and they don't want to fund what actually makes Friends of Hemming Park valuable and brings added value to the park, and that's the programming. It was devolved into a discussion about the homeless, but during Art Walk, we have just as many homeless people as we do on every other night.
Right.
But it's the programming that brings everyone else downtown, and then it feels like more of a normal downtown. And that's the point. That's the added value of Friends of Hemming Park, is the programming. The safe and clean is the Parks Department responsibility. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. So how about that? You know, it does bring up an interesting argument that I've actually heard from a couple of business owners who are opposed, or who are for, rather, the city to take over the park again. What they've said is, you know, the programming doesn't necessarily have to be going through Friends of Hemming Park. It could be funded by the city themselves. They could be handing out these permits. And what would you say to those that kind of have that opinion? They're just maybe wondering why a nonprofit is managing the park.
One of the things when we did the original contract was if the city, if you were to go to use the park when the city had control of it, their permitting process, the insurance requirements were very difficult. So by allowing a nonprofit, we were able to make that much easier. And we need more third parties to come in and program events. I agree with Jen. It really comes down to density. The city, the city could do Clean and Safe, but it would be within Parks and Rec, and you don't have an organization that's dedicated to making sure that things are being done properly in the park. And that's where the city's funding is going towards that. We need to do more in terms of programming, raise dollars to do it. But yeah, third parties, we think it's a great venue for third parties to come in, and we can make it very easy with the way we're set up.
Emily, I want to ask you a little bit about if there's any way for you to kind of count, how much of an effect here, or to make a guess of how much of an effect these events or regular programming has had on foot traffic to your store. I mean, have you seen an uptick on days when there are things going on?
Oh yeah, it's very obvious in our sales, but on the days that we don't have programming associated with downtown, I mean, we're just pushing more and hustling more to get our name out there, and it's just more work focused on just our sole single business. But working together as a team, I think we can all bring people down together to participate and to support what's going on in businesses.
All right. Well, we've got a lot of calls, and I'm going to try to get to as many of them as I can. So we'll be brief with each call. Mike in Arlington. Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to throw out a slightly different experience with downtown from the previous caller. I and my son, my youngest son, both go down there pretty regularly. We are big Chamblin's Book Mine devotees, and I've taken him and his friends down there for some of the events. Sadly, One Spark didn't happen this year, but we were there for Force Fest. There's a Pokey Crawl that's gone on. I've produced two videos for my Facebook channel that showcase some of the things going on downtown. When there's programming going on, that kind of gives some life to the whole thing. And I want to say that, I've seen, you can't miss homeless people there, but they're not particularly obvious when there's programming or events going on. And there is security there, even when there's not programming going on. I've seen police officers go in and, they don't manhandle or get violent, but they kind of cordon off people that are acting out, and they I've watched them talk to and deal with some of the homeless issues. I don't think I know that that's been a problem in the past. I don't see that as being a problem
right now.
I know
sure.
that people are nervous about it, but I think that is a perception versus a reality. I'm not dismissing the reality. I mean, you can't take the two
sure.
shootings over recently at Art Walk and deny that there are some issues going on. I think, though, you look at the some of that part, I think that probably has more to do with the mistake they've made in letting the guy that they've got running the landing run it now, who's let it
sure.
literally let it drift into
Thanks.
The dust, and that's kind of sad. But that's, I just wanted to give rise to, give a different experience
in sure.
the case that it's not. There's a lot of good things going on downtown, and it needs to be notched up, not held down. It needs to. It's a good investment, and it's a part of our city and a part of our city's life.
Appreciate it, Mike. We're gonna go directly into the next call here, Elizabeth. Elizabeth, you're in downtown. What do you have to say?
I work downtown. I cut through Hemming Plaza all the time. I have never felt threatened, never felt unsafe. That's just not warranted. And I go back to, there are older citizens who ride the bus, who come down to Hemming Plaza to be with friends, to enjoy the park. They are not homeless. I think they're mistaken for homeless. I think the homeless population downtown hangs out more in the park behind the library instead of in front of the library. And it's a misconception. My question is, don't those citizens have just as much right to use that park and enjoy that park as any of us?
Sure.
And just because we see them and think something, we shouldn't take that right away from them. And they're just enjoying the park like all of us want
Thank you, Elizabeth. So how about that? It's managed by a nonprofit that's opposite the city, that's separate from the city, but it's a public-private partnership. It's a public park. I'll go from Bill and then to Jen. How do you deal with that? I mean, doesn't everyone have a right to enjoy the park?
Everyone has a right to enjoy the park, absolutely. But what we saw was that there was no consequences to not abiding by the park rules. Mm-hmm. And so that was one of the big things. The ordinance that was just passed in January made it very clear that JSO can now trespass for violating the park rules. And we've put in some park rules that we think are important to make the park safe and more welcoming. If you abide by the rules, you have every right to be in the park, but we think it's important that you abide by the rules to make it that welcoming environment.
Jen, isn't there a really big danger here of alienating people from different socioeconomic backgrounds who may be hanging out in the park?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with quite a few of the callers that have said that we need to be compassionate to the homeless population. The park is a resource for everybody in our community. And I think that is having some rules. Everyone needs to enjoy the park and be respectful of everyone else who's in the park. And again, I just push that that's where programming comes in. I mean, a lot of people have talked about this, Art Walk, Gastrofest. During these larger events, there is a mix of different individuals from our community using the park. And so one group doesn't stand out more than the other. We're all there enjoying it together. And I think that's what the end goal really is.
All right. And it looks like we'll be wrapping it up there. Thank you to Emily Moody of Wolf and Cub.
Thank you.
Jen Ernest of Candy Apple Cafe and Bill Prescott of Friends of Hemming Park. This will be an issue that we continue following. Thank you all for coming on the show.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Hendrix Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, the House Intelligence Committee holds its first public hearing into alleged Russian interference in last year's election. Its chairman has some questions.
I'm very interested, Republicans or Democrats, if people are talking to Russian agents, we want to know about that.
What, if anything, connects the Kremlin to the campaign? Next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
We continue celebrating both Florida Archaeology Month and Women's History Month on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and this week we'll visit the archaeological ruins at Malacompra and the Bulow Plantation in Flagler County. We'll discuss lesser-known but influential women in Florida history and talk about the formerly all-black Lincoln High School in Gainesville. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning. Live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross.
Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
Welcome back. Local musician DeSean Kirkland has a new album out today. Genesis is his debut, self-released by the University of North Florida graduate and Jacksonville native. DeSean, welcome to First Coast Connect.
Thank you. Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about how you got into music. And, you know, you're a Jacksonville native. You're from UNF. How did you first get started on this journey?
I first got started on this journey. Well, all of my family are musicians, but I was a kid drummer in church, like 5 years old, 6 years old, 7 years old, and my grandma was the lead person of the church, and so she was in the church one day, and she had this unction that I should play piano, and she brought me this keyboard manual, not even like a tutorial, but a keyboard manual, yeah, and she said that. That I should play and that I had something great. So from there, I went to UNF and I studied under Lynn Ariel, who's world-renowned jazz musician, Dr. Carl Tasher. We went to Italy and South Africa, and we had these great experiences, and I've been training. And I graduated in 2012 from UNF, and now I am releasing my own music that's available worldwide, and I'm just excited to be, you know, kind of living a dream come true, you know what I mean?
Let's talk about the kind of music that you produce. Do you think this is, would you say that this is, what genre would you say that this is? If you fit yourself into a genre, I know that can be difficult sometimes, but if you had to fit yourself into a genre, how would you explain your music to someone that's never heard it?
Well, I would explain it as really good music. That's what I would explain it as, because it's not... it's not anything ruckus or raunchy but it's because I'm a real musician, you know, I'm classically trained and jazz trained. And I talk to a variety of different people from all over, and I played at Seasons 52 for a while. So people would request, the hit songs of the past, mm-hmm. and they would request the hit songs of today. So what I did was I kind of mixed those two together and came up with my own sound. So, overall, because you have to put yourself in the category, I would say R&B, pop, but it's just really good music.
I was going to say, yeah, there's a R&B kind of, not necessarily a soul, but there's influences. You can tell in the music. Listening to a few different songs and a couple of concerts that you had on YouTube. Tell me a little bit about the instrumentation. So you play keyboard, you've played drums.
Right.
Do you find that you stick to one type of instrument, or do you kind of move around a lot?
I play keyboard. I play piano. Like I said, I'm classically and jazz trained in piano. And I play drums and I produce as well, you know, electronically. So I kind of like to keep that live sound. You know, so when people hear it, they can kind of envision a live concert or a live experience, you know. So piano, drums, horns, guitar, bass, everything, you know.
Everything. Okay, and all that put together is the sound of DeSean Kirkland. But so, you know, you've described, or it's been, your songs have been described as clean love songs, right? Mm. And so what do you think it means to have a clean love song today in 2017?
Well, in 2017, because we have so much access to so much information, good and bad, to have a clean love song means that anybody can listen to it, no matter what age or cultural background. They can listen and enjoy it, and no matter what their whatever their beliefs are or whatever, they can still enjoy the music. That it's clean, good music, universal music that anybody can enjoy.
And so, I guess in Jacksonville, how would you describe the music scene here? This seems like there's a really wide variety of types of bands and artists out there right here in the River City. Where do you fit into that?
There's so much good music coming out of here. So many people are coming out with some really great albums here in Jacksonville. And I'm just glad to be considered in the number, you know, because you have some really, really solid guys that are coming out with jazz albums. You got guys like Larry Wilson, Chris Thomas, Meacham Clark, these guys, Stan Jr. These guys are coming out with albums that are just like breathtaking. So I'm glad just to put my bid in and say, here's what I offer, you know.
Do you see there as being some type of kind of resurgence of the Jacksonville music scene, especially when you talk about jazz? I just feel like if there's anecdotally just like this popularity that seems to be growing among young people listening to this music again, and maybe it wasn't really there 5 or even 10 years ago.
It is, and I believe I read an article in Forbes the other day that said Jacksonville is one of the five most growing cities in our country. So with that, partnered with music, the music scene is opening up very wide as well. And the opportunities, you know, different businesses. I heard you guys talking about different businesses earlier. Different businesses and different people coming in with these opportunities are allowing musicians more opportunities to play and help businesses grow. So, yeah, the scene, the Jacksonville music scene is really, really spreading a whole lot.
So tell me a little bit about the work it took to produce Genesis. How many songs on the album here? I mean, it's a full album. It's not even an EP. And you self-released it. So tell me a little bit about the process there.
Oh, man. Well, let's just say if they give me $250,000 to produce it, it'd be way easier because that's the number that they give, apparently, the record labels and everything. But it took a lot of long nights, man, a lot of working hard, getting guys to rally around you. I got a lot of great musicians that sacrificed and donated their time and volunteered to be a part and contributed to this album. It took long nights, man. I've been working on it for years, working on my singing voice for years. I've had people tell me, like, you shouldn't sing, you should only do this or do that, or you shouldn't play jazz, you should play only do this. But I just said, man, I don't want to hear that. I want to do what I believe that I'm capable of doing, you know, and I did it. And it took a while. I say on my Facebook, it's 20 years in the making because I've been working on it so long, working on my singing voice, working on my stage presence, working on my confidence. All of those things play such a major part. It's not just the music, but it's your confidence. It's your stage presence. It's your ability to communicate with people. It's your ability to reach inside what somebody else is thinking about this particular situation and pin it and write it down and record it and sing it with such a passion that they're convinced of the same message, you know. So it took a lot, man. It took a lot. But like I said, if they give me $250,000, it'll be a whole lot easier, you know.
Right. There'd be a lot of things that would be a lot easier if somebody would just give us $250,000. Yeah. So tell me, you know, the lyrics of your songs, are they really based in your life experiences, or would you say that these are just kind of more general experiences that people have in life?
No, man. They're totally. Each song is a crafted story from something that actually happened in my life. Every song is something that actually took place, or some situation, some girl or something. I'm married now, so that was
congratulations.
Thank you. But every song is a different story. It's an actual true story. And I think when I call it clean music, it's real music because it's they're true stories. And if I experienced it, out of the 7 billion almost people in the world, I'm sure someone else has experienced this same thing in a similar kind of situation. So,
all right. So we're going to go to a break before you play. But I wanted to give you a chance here to tell us any details of upcoming tours. You just released the album today. So where can people pick it up? Where can they listen to it? And where can they go see you?
You can pick the album up on my website, dsean.net. You can download it on iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify, Google Play, everywhere. I'm coming up with an album release party right now. I'll have the information on my website, dsean.net. I'll have tons of shows coming up. Just go to my website, go to my Facebook, make sure you subscribe, make sure you like so you can follow and keep in touch with what's going on.
DeShawn Kirkland, thank you for coming on the show. And for those that want to hear a little sample from the album Genesis, stay tuned after the break.
Should schools be required to offer recess? Does Florida need new fracking regulations? These and other important questions are up for debate in this year's legislative session. WJCT and public radio stations across Florida are teaming up for coverage of hot topics expected to make news. Hear these stories during Morning Edition. Decision Florida coverage all this week here on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Jazz Night in America, it's the 100th birthday of Billie Holiday. Cassandra Wilson brings her new project to the Kennedy Center, and pianist Barbara Carroll talks about the opportunities she had to perform with Lady Day.
And when she sang, the expression was outstanding, very often heartbreaking.
That's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back to First Coast Connect, and I'm here with DeSean Kirkland. He's got a little bit of tunes to play for us from his recently released album, Genesis.
Lost faith in love's ability. Didn't think it would be real for me. But oh, you've got me so addicted to this dream. And I'm starting to believe again. Yeah, catch me. I'm coming down with no control. It's like gravity. I'm falling, falling, falling in love again. From the sky into your arms, like gravity. I'm falling, falling, falling in love again. From the sky into your arms. Seven 7,000 feet, I'm in the air. I'm high off your love, your touch, your care. And no one makes me feel the way that you do. See, I'm falling hard in love with you, yeah. Catch me, don't let go. I'm coming down with no control. It's like gravity. I'm falling, falling, falling in love again. From the sky into your arms, like gravity. I'm falling, falling, falling in love again. From the sky into your arms. Said I'm falling, falling, falling in love again. From the sky into your arms.
And that's DeSean, Jacksonville's own DeSean Kirkland. Thank you so much. That was wonderful. You can pick up Genesis today, and we'll be right back with Cole Pepper.
Journalist Ron Powers watched both his sons be transformed by schizophrenia. After his younger son killed himself, his elder son was also diagnosed with the disease. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Powers about his new book. It's part memoir and part history of the treatment of the mentally ill. His book is called No One Cares About Crazy People. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Indivisible is a live national conversation about America in a time of change.
If they were to completely drop the Affordable Care Act, I wouldn't be totally opposed to that as long as that pre-existing condition stayed in there.
As a country, we need to decide, do we care or do we not care? And if we don't care, just be honest about it.
I'm Kai Wright. Tune in or call in. Join us Monday through Thursday for the first 100 days of the new presidency. There's a seat at this table for everyone.
Welcome back, and it's Monday, so you know what that means. It's time.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too? I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper. If you drink Dr. Pepper, you're...
It's time to talk with Jacksonville Sultan of Sports. Cole Pepper is on the line. Cole, how are you?
Doing well this morning and enjoying March Madness, as the Gators are as well, I think, after they knocked off East Tennessee State in the first round, then annihilated Virginia 65-39 on Saturday. Florida's Sweet 16 opponent is Wisconsin, who knocked out the defending national champions Villanova over the weekend. So the Gators and Badgers will meet on Friday in New York, and Mike White's team with a chance to move on from there. I think they'll be favored to move on to the regional finals, and then two wins away from the Final Four for the Gators. Same cannot be said for Florida State, though. They saw their March Madness come to an end in a disappointing loss to Xavier in the second round. This was one of FSU's most talented teams, but they couldn't translate that to success in the tournament. And if it, if basketball was more important at Florida State, it's obviously a football school, there may be some louder noises being made about a change in the coaching situation. I'm not sure that it matters enough in Tallahassee to make a change, but we could see that coming here in the years to come.
As an FSU alumni, I would have to agree with that assessment. So let's move from college to the NFL. What's going on with the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Well, I just want to share one story about the Jaguars' newest signee, one of their newest signees, defensive end Calais Campbell. He has the reputation of being a real pro and also of getting involved in his community. When he played in Arizona, he was very much that way. And, in fact, he would be fans wearing his jersey in the stands and have somebody from his foundation go up and make a donation to the charity of their choice based on somebody wearing a Calais Campbell jersey. So you might want to start shopping. But he wasted no time in Jacksonville. Just a week after he signed a free agent deal with the Jags, Campbell's foundation, which is named for his father, announced that it is taking applications for students to earn $10,000 college scholarships. Campbell's looking for kids from big families in particular. Good to see him get involved in the community so quickly.
All right, and how about the Armada?
Getting close to getting the season started, less than 2 weeks away. They'll start the season April 2nd against FC Edmonton, and for the first time this year, the Armada will be playing their home matches at Hodges Stadium on the UNF campus. Over the weekend, they had a 2-2 draw with Orlando City B, Orlando City's second team. And they're looking forward to a big season for the Armada. Meanwhile, the Sharks began their season, the first ever in the National Arena League, with a win over Columbus on the road on Friday. They'll host the Georgia Firebirds on Saturday at the arena. That'll be the home opener for the Sharks. And interesting to see how this new league will develop. The Sharks certainly one of the leading teams in that league, both in terms of what happens on the field and in terms of kind of creating the league and making the thing happen.
All right. Well, Cole Pepper, thank you as always for joining us every Monday morning on First Coast Connect to talk the world of sports. Cole, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mearshart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show's theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app to listen anytime. Next on 1A, the House Intelligence Committee holds its first public hearing into alleged Russian interference in the 2016 election. I'm Ryan Bank. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM in Jacksonville. your community, your world. Melissa will be back again tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.
Baptist Health, helping to define the new frontier of stroke treatment with clinical trials that can reverse stroke's devastating effects. Stroke can happen at any age. Do you know the signs? Learn more at baptistjacks.com/stroke.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm. Terrell Hogan's consumer law practice provides representation for personal financial injuries caused by unfair and deceptive business dealings. More at terrellhogan.com.
Goodwill of North Florida. Donate, shop, jobs. Good things from North Florida with Goodwill. Proud supporters of WJCT's First Coast Connect. GoodwillJax.org for more info.